Welcome to the Oh Wow Science Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the UIF Adult Education Program at the Unalaska Learning Center. At UIF, we honor and recognize that we are on Indigenous Onangam Dananggin land where this podcast is being recorded. My name is Tatiana, and my goal is to bring you fun science facts and ideas every Friday at noon and Saturday at 4 p.m. on KUCB. Episode 9, The Ocean. This week, I'm going to talk to you all about the mysteries of the ocean and the marine life in the ocean and maybe some of the maybe negative things that have happened with the ocean, like the pollution in the last half a century or so, just so that we are all aware of what is all going on. And also, because the ocean is like the last frontier, the true last frontier, and I'll talk about why in a minute. But this week, I've been thinking about the ocean because on Monday, I took a necropsy training. I think it's pronounced necropsy or necropsy. Well, necropsy is a surgical procedure that you perform on a deceased animal that has washed ashore or that you found deceased in the wild in order to find out the cause of death. And in Unalaska, that's usually marine mammals like sea otters, whales, or seals that can wash ashore from unknown reasons. This work is important for both scientists and industry because it helps us understand what are the things that are affecting our ecosystems. So it could be human impact, like it could be an animal that gets tangled up in fishing line, or it gets hit by a boat, or it could be natural, like an infection, disease, or starvation. It's important for us to know what's happening out there and what's happening to our animals in the wild, because a lot of the time it's hard for us to know. We are so small compared to the big, vast ocean. Did you know that we know more about other planets in our solar system than we know about the ocean on Earth? Less than 5% of the planet's oceans have been explored. That is how difficult it is for us humans to explore it, to see it in the first place. Like, we don't know. It's like a different planet. Under all that water. Our oceans cover more than 70% of the Earth's surface, reaching at around 59 million square miles. Here in Unalaska specifically, we're sitting in the Pacific Ocean, and we are so far out into it that I'd say we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean compared to most civilization. And the Pacific Ocean is the largest body of water on Earth, by the way. There are five oceans, and this one is the largest. It's so big that it's bigger than all of the land on Earth combined. It's also so big that at its widest point, which is taken from like Indonesia all the way to Colombia, South America, the Pacific Ocean is wider than the moon by quite a lot. So this widest point is about 12,300 miles across, which is more than five times the diameter of the moon. So either the ocean is big or the moon is small or both, but it's pretty freaking big. And like I said, it's more unknown than outer space, and it's as dark and mysterious too. Let's get into some things that we do know about the ocean so far, and the things that make our oceans really unique and different from living on land. So first off, why is the ocean blue? It's because of the sun and the properties of light. So all visible light is made up of a spectrum of colors, which is why we see a rainbow in the sky sometimes. And all the colors are made up of their unique wavelengths. So the blue color of the ocean is because the sun's red and orange wavelengths, so the other colors, are being absorbed by the surface of the water. So we don't see those. But its blue wavelengths penetrate deeper into the water, giving way to a blue tint. And because those wavelengths can travel farther down into the water, the ocean will tend to appear more blue the lower you go. And this is different from like water in a glass, because that water, it's not going to be blue as much because there aren't enough molecules in that glass to absorb the light in the same way. The ocean, on the other hand, has a ton of water, right? So now we know the ocean is huge, right? But exactly how deep is the ocean? Well, it's miles and miles deep, but it varies just like land does. Some parts are deeper and others are more shallow, but the Mariana Trench in Western Pacific is considered to be the deepest part of the world's oceans and the deepest point on Earth. Inside the trench is a valley known as Challenger Deep that extends roughly 7 miles below the surface, and that's about 36,000 feet. For comparison, the entirety of Mount Everest, which is the tallest mountain in the world, located on the Nepal/China border, is only at 29,000 feet. So it could easily be accommodated in that part of the ocean. So what does that mean? That means there are mountains in the ocean. So that's not the only part that's so deep, and there's just mountains and valleys everywhere. And that also means volcanoes. Up to 80% of volcanic eruptions go unnoticed by land dwellers like us. That's because they're erupting underwater. More than 1 million volcanoes, some extinct and some are still active, they spew molten hot lava beneath the surface of the ocean. And despite this heat, and by the way, like the core of the Earth under the continents is super hot. So there's just like so much heat inside of the Earth that's just sometimes comes out. So despite the heat, creatures can still be found near this super heated vents. And researchers believe that these areas, they harbor several undiscovered species that are invulnerable to the harsh environment, which can include that water that reaches up to 750 degrees Fahrenheit. And if you listen to my last week's episode, you'll know all about how bacteria can survive these crazy environments, and maybe the most adapted creatures on the planet is bacteria. Okay, now that we've established that there's mountain ranges in the ocean, what happens when we go to the very bottom? What does the bottom of the ocean look like? So the bottom of the ocean is as varied as the Earth's surface that we live on. Like I said, it's got mountains, valleys, trenches, and even rivers and lakes. For me, I always think about how our platonic plates, which are the continents, their edges are usually found in the oceans of the world. So for example, our continents are always moving. They're moving either way. Some of them are moving away from one another, and some of them are moving together, so clashing. And oftentimes, this makes mountain ranges when they clash with another continent. So this is true for a lot of the West Coast. So the Northern Hemisphere continent is clashing with the Pacific plate, which most of it is under the ocean. But in the Atlantic Ocean, which is moving further west and away from the European African continent, instead of mountains, you have valleys because it's being stretched out. It's not clashing, it's doing the opposite. And this one is called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. These are the deepest areas of the ocean, that part that's being moving away from, the two plates are moving away from each other. So they're stretched out and thinning out in a way, I guess. Some surfaces in the ocean feature sites that don't seem to make any logical sense, such as rivers and lakes. There are rivers at the bottom of the ocean that can stretch to be miles long. They stretch across the ground, even though they're submerged. I know, that doesn't make any sense. How can a body of water exist in a body of water? How can you have rivers and lakes in the ocean? Well, water from under the seafloor can seep up and dissolve salt layers, forming depressions. Because the water in the depression is denser than the water all around it, it settles into the depression and forms a distinct pool, or a river maybe. It also depends on water currents, so there could be different water currents at the bottom of the ocean that can explain why some of that water looks like it's a moving river. There's also very strange organisms that live all the way on the bottom of the ocean, even though it's miles below the surface and no sunlight can ever reach down there. There is also, as recently documented by a fancy high-tech camera, even trash lying on the bottom of the ocean, the way we got trash on Earth. Yes, trash is everywhere thanks to us humans. But can people go to the bottom of the ocean? Well, so far, only 3 people have been able to make the trip using a submersive watercraft so they don't get crushed by the pressure of the water. And the fact remains that more people have been to the moon than to the bottom of the ocean. Like I said, we know more about outer space than we do about the ocean here on Earth, because the pressure at the bottom of the ocean is about 16,000 pounds per square inch, which is over 1,000 times more than the pressure you feel at sea level, like here and on Alaska. That kind of pressure would crush you like an ant. This is why. This is why we haven't been able to explore the ocean that much. And it was only in 1943 that Jacques Cousteau, a French explorer and a filmmaker, he invented the scuba diving equipment that lets us dive into the ocean as deep as 130 feet, which, by the way, isn't that far down compared to the depth of the ocean. But it was revolutionary for us humans. We could finally be able to go into the water and see what is underneath there. So the ocean, you know, that seems like, you know, with the pressure and everything, that seems like not a very friendly place to live, at least deep below on the bottom. So what lives in the ocean besides what we know, fish and whales like we have here? But what lives in the ocean? So, like I said, size and water pressure conspire to limit our exploration of the oceans, so much so that it's estimated we've identified only 1/3 of the potential marine life lurking beneath the surface. You know, like maybe there's giant squid down there, which we know. Maybe there's aliens, who knows? But it's possible that a lot of this marine life that we don't know about are smaller organisms. So, you know, things that don't come up to the surface. But it's also likely that some of that is whales and other mammal species that have yet to be discovered. For example, earlier this year, we discovered a new whale species in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's 2021. We're still discovering whales. This whale is called the Rice's whale. The reason it's taken us so long to discover the Rice's whale is because there's only an estimated 100 individuals in the species, so it's endangered. It's rare to see them in the first place because there's not that many of them. And the other reason is because, first of all, they're mostly in the ocean. They're not coming up that much on the surface. And in order to specify that it's a different species from the other whales that we see, is that we need actual samples. Like we, I mean scientists, need actual samples like bones and skulls in order to identify that it's a different species from something else you're seeing swimming around in the ocean. We're making progress on this front, though. An average of 2,000 new species are described each year. So if you think we're done discovering things, no, we're not. And this episode on the ocean is another proof of that. Turns out there's just a lot of species out there. You wouldn't think so, living where we do, but there's just so much we can't see, especially inside the ocean. Because precious little of the oceans has been explored, it's actually estimated that about 91% of the species that exist under the sea have yet to be discovered. So if you want to be a marine biologist, go ahead, knowing that so much is yet to be discovered. 91%. This is an estimate, it's like a statistical estimate of how much we don't know that's under there. Another interesting thing about the ocean is that life kind of changes the lower and deeper you go into the ocean, right? Because it's a totally different ecosystem. And because sunlight cannot reach after a certain point, water is dense. And that means that organisms that live in the dark can't use sunlight to make energy the way that plants and algae can on the surface of the water. The organisms that survive without sunlight also don't see all the colors. So like, you know, here on Earth, we got the sun, we have the rainbows. But down there, you don't need that. So even if there is some kind of illumination by the animals themselves, like bioluminescence, for example, down there, they can't see red. So that's the thing we know, because red, the color red, doesn't reach into the darkness. Like I said, those wavelengths gets absorbed by the surface of the water. So if you go deep into the ocean, a lot of animals will actually be reddish in color, ironically. And this is because red is a great camouflage. So predators can't even see them. So if you're an animal and you're red, you basically appear invisible or black. Like red is like a black, the black color of the ocean. So then you fit in because everything is dark. And you won't be spotted. So on to another topic closer to the surface of the ocean. Did you know that the ocean makes oxygen? That's great news for us since we need it to breathe and survive. And also since, you know, we're cutting down all the forest trees that make our oxygen. But oceans produce about 70% of the oxygen supply in the atmosphere, thanks to marine plants releasing it as a byproduct of photosynthesis. So one phytoplankton, Prochlorococcus, that's the name, is estimated to be solely responsible for one in every five breaths a human will take. So thank you, phytoplankton in the ocean, for letting me breathe oxygen. So yeah, in conclusion, most of the oxygen in our atmosphere comes from tiny marine plants in the ocean, phytoplankton, kelp, and algae plankton. When we think of the ocean, we also think of waves. Waves can be both dangerous when you're out in the water, and they can be peaceful if you're just sitting, listening to them on the beach on a nice day. It's a really beautiful sound of waves clashing against the shore. But did you know that the biggest waves are actually under the surface of the ocean. I guess in this sense, I mean, waves are water, water that's moving. So these are called internal waves. These water walls have been found 3 miles below the surface. The waves are part of water layers with different densities and can reach heights of 800 feet before collapsing. Scientists believe these massive forces can help move heat and nutrients to other areas. So it's kind of like how the ocean moves around. And these waves are usually unnoticed by us as, you know, they're only a few inches above the surface. We don't really see them. Like, we know the ocean is always moving. But that's because these are internal waves and they're moving basically on the inside of the ocean rather than on the surface. And as these internal waves, they move towards land and the depths shrink, like the depth of the ocean gets smaller and smaller, they pick up water and increase in above surface size, but they slow down a lot. So we don't see what's actually happening when the ocean is deep in those parts. What about tsunami waves? Those are big, right? Those are different. And they're not only under the water, they're on top of the water. Tsunami waves can actually reach up to 100 feet tall. And tsunamis, as we know here and on Alaska from our drills, they're generated by things like earthquakes somewhere else that shake the ocean. And when these waves reach shallow water near land, the energy that they accumulated that would normally be dispersed goes up because it's clashing with that land and it elongates that wave and that energy in the wave. So I think the biggest tsunami in 1958, so there was an earthquake and a landslide in Alaska that generated a tsunami 100 feet high, and it destroyed all vegetation up to 1,720 feet. I don't know. That's like half of Ballyhoo, maybe. I'm not sure. But this is the largest in recorded history, and tsunamis can move at 500 miles per hour, which is why they would be so destructive, right? Now let's move on and talk a little bit more about pollution. So here's the deal about pollution and about our ocean animal life in a nutshell, which is that the fish in the ocean are eating a lot of plastic, with over 7 million tons of plastic winding up in the ocean each year. It's inevitable that a lot of it winds up as part of an unwelcome addition to a fish's diet. For fish in the northern Pacific, researchers at the University of California once estimated that they swallow between 12,000 and 24,000 tons every year. That's a lot of plastic. And it doesn't end there. So like with pollution, there's a lot of things that is affecting our oceans. For another example, the chemistry of the ocean is changing. This is a thing called acidification. So acidification is what happens when a bunch of the CO2 that's increasing in the atmosphere is taken up by the ocean water. It makes the water more acidic. It also makes the fish more acidic because they breathe and they live in that ocean. And all this CO2, it is warming. So it warms up the ocean, the water gets warmer. The migration patterns of animals is changing because the ocean is warming up. And animals, they have to change where they're going. Kind of like, you know, on land, we have animals changing their migration because climate changing. And warming is especially harmful for the larger marine mammals, who already have trouble staying cool due to their large body sizes. That's why a lot of whales hang out up in the colder waters, up in the Arctic and around Alaska, because they need the cool water to cool their bodies down. Quote, "The ocean is the largest solar energy collector on Earth. according to NOAA. The proliferation of greenhouse gases prevents heat from escaping our planet's atmosphere, and all that energy has to go somewhere, right? Unfortunately, it goes straight into the oceans. As a result, ocean temperatures have quickly risen over the past few decades. Another effect of the warming of the ocean is that ice is melting. And we're already seeing this in Alaska too, where the ice sheet at the pole is shrinking and less ice is forming over the winters. So that again is shrinks that permanent ice sheet, compromising that entire ecosystem that depends on that ice. And what about the fish populations? Well, Dutch Harbor, the capital of fishing in North America, of the fishing industry. Well, there's a lot of people in the world. A lot of people like to eat fish. A lot of demand. So, of course, you know, we have to meet the demand. But we have taken out about 95% of the big fish in the ocean since 1950. So in the last 70 years or so, we just really have really affected that ecosystem, especially with big fish. And here's some more statistics about how fishing is affecting our oceans. 90% of fish population are either fished to capacity or overfished, right? That means it's like there's just not a lot of room left to take more. You know, you have that 10% of fish that's not overfished. But, you know, there's just not much more we can take in order to meet the demand for fish that we have in this economy. We're already going further from shore to fish. We're using high technology tools to do it. We're going into deeper waters. We're doing as much as we can to find the last fish in order to satisfy the consumer. And it's not just fish. You know, with development, we on the coast, we're affecting a lot of other things too. Like we have the mangrove trees. We're affecting those ecosystems. And mangroves are great because they keep the soil in place. They provide a lot of nursery habitats for animals and fish. We're also affecting our wetlands, our filtration systems. And because of all that development, you know, a lot of more pollution is ending up in the ocean. All of these are part of the ecosystem and a way to keep healthy marine populations. There's also a thing called dead zones in the ocean. And these are called dead zones because they can be barren of any life. So these are just parts in the ocean where you're not going to find any life. It's just not sustainable for life. And one reason pollution is such an issue for oceans connected to the dead zones is that pollution can rob water from the oxygen that's needed to support life. So when runoff from waste disposal gets into the water, it can feed an overabundance of algae, which then dies and sinks. So you have way too much algae and way too much of the mass, of its mass. So as it's decomposing, the algae consumes the available oxygen in the water, and that creates hypoxic areas or hot spots with no oxygen. And if fish of other marine life don't find a new space to go to, their toast. They don't have oxygen. So it's kind of this cycle, right? It creates a snowball effect of things start happening. So in conclusion, as we know it now, the ocean is thoroughly screwed up as of the last half century because of us humans. At the time of this podcast, 1 ton of plastic is entering the ocean every 4 seconds. So let's talk about plastic. Plastic has been around since 1856, but it's only in the 1960s that there was an explosion of plastics in industry where people started using plastic in their day-to-day lives. as well as the creation of, quote, single-use plastics, like coffee cups or straws or anything that's used only once and then thrown away, which is unfortunate because for our oceans, because plastic does not decompose. So where is it supposed to go in the end? This brings me to the Great Garbage Patch of the Pacific Ocean. So the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is just what it sounds like. This is a bunch of trash in the ocean that's come together into one patch. It is currently between the size of Texas to the size of Russia. It's hard to tell just how big it is. And remember, the Pacific is bigger than the moon, so it can fit a lot of trash. It's literally a huge mass of plastic that's all entangled together and floating around together in the ocean. We don't see it because it's in the middle of the ocean, but it's there, and it's only getting bigger. Right now, it's about 1.6 million kilometers big. This has happened because ocean currents collect things, right? The waves, internal waves, and it's all in a spiral. Basically, the oceans are in charge of our climate, if you didn't know that, and like the wind patterns. And most of the plastic is really small. A lot of it is in microplastics, which means it's plastic that's been broken down so much that it's tiny and marine animals think it's food. The tiny pieces make it also a lot harder to clean up. So it's not like huge, you know, plastic bottles. It's like a huge layer. It's just like a layer of all different things, of all different plastics and trash. But it's not the only garbage patch in the ocean. Every one of our five oceans has huge garbage patches floating around. Like I said, plastic does not decompose, and plastic is also not really recycled. Nobody's reusing it most of the time. So all of that is just going into that ocean. The reason plastic cannot decompose is because it's not organic. We created it. We made plastic in a lab. It didn't used to exist. So bacteria can't break it down. Plastics just break into smaller and smaller pieces over time and become what we now call microplastics, which are pieces. They're just so small, they're almost invisible. And there's recent studies that show microplastics are now found all over the world because they're already in our atmosphere. They're everywhere now. So even on top of mountains where nobody lives, there's microplastics there. And when we talk about animals and their survival, our use of plastics also affects them because they see pieces in the water, you know, they have color, they may be colorful, they think it's food, and they fill up on that. And since it's not food, they actually end up starving because their stomach is full of plastic, but they can't eat anymore. Scientists keep finding birds and whales and other animals dead on the shores. And when they open their stomachs, it's just full of plastic. It's so sad. Animals also get entangled in this trash that we dump in the ocean. Like fishing lines or literally anything else that's made of plastic, it can get wrapped around the animals' throats or bodies and suffocate them or alter their bodies. And we all know that a weak or injured animal is a dead animal because it's easy prey. Ending on that note, I hope this episode about our ocean life has given you stuff to think about, whether it's about how mysterious and diverse our ocean is, and maybe the true last frontier to explore, or about our own behavior with single-use plastics and trash. Maybe trying to be more sustainable in the future, because really it's not just about preserving nature, but it's about preserving ourselves and our way of life, being able to live in harmony with the natural world in a way that benefits us all in the process. There's so many other topics that I didn't cover in this episode about the huge ocean world. One big topic is actually coral reefs, and how coral reefs are at the center of our conservation efforts when it comes to fish and the fishing industries. especially down lower in the warmer waters. So look them up if you're interested in learning more about that. And now I want to share with you guys some movie ideas about the ocean that I find either to be funny or educational movies that I've seen. And so first one is the movie Life Aquatic. I think it's in our on Alaska Library here, actually. So Life Aquatic is this funny comedy with Bill Murray that's loosely imitating like the famous ocean explorer Jack Cousteau that I mentioned earlier. And it's hilarious. This movie is basically like it's this marine biologist with his team and they go on a hunt for a shark that ate one of the crew members. And it's pretty cool movie. Another movie is Nemo. So I love this movie, even though it's supposed to be a kid's movie. I think it's one of those classics that's just also for adults. I love how most of the movie is with the perspective from deep inside the ocean. I love that it's just such a different perspective for humans and for movies in general. And it's so creative and so funny. So I recommend it. There's a movie called Deep Planet. It's actually not out yet. It's in production, but I found it when I was researching about the bottom of the ocean and like what humans have been able to go to the very bottom. And so Deep Planet, I think it's actually maybe a TV show, and it's about all the deep dives that people are trying to do to see what's down there. So I'm really interested about this movie or TV show when it comes out. And then finally, the movie Oceans. It's a Disney documentary about what all lives in the ocean. So it's more like a beautiful documentary with like great scenery and all the animals that we know of in the ocean. I noticed when I was looking this up, there's a lot of scary movies when I Googled movies about the ocean for this episode. And I think it really ties in with how little we know about the ocean. So our natural inclination is to be afraid of what we don't know. And also because of sharks. But I think that's a very human reaction that we have to many things that we don't know or understand, is to be afraid of them. And this is why science, exploration, and discovery are so important as a first step to understanding our world. And being not afraid of whatever new things come up. Of course, there are many other steps to take after the fact, after the exploration. And this is acceptance of whatever it is we discovered. And integration of this new fact or whatever into our knowledge. Acceptance of facts is another big barrier that can be difficult to overcome for people. And that's another human nature behavior. But sometimes we humans, we can stand in our own way from something that may be good for us. So I'm going to leave you here. I want you to remain curious. You know, if you're out there in the ocean, you know, what is it that are you seeing? What questions are yet to be answered? You know, if you're on the beach, what animal life, what plant life are you seeing on the shores? The ocean is huge and it's full of mystery, and it's also part of our survival, part of our oxygen and our ecosystems, part of our industry and economy. So let's learn more about it. Let's see how we can better ourselves on the earth that we're living. So stay curious, keep your ears open, keep your eyes open, and also keep your mind open to the science in your life.